back to Fish Talk Radio. This is John Hennigan in studio, and also in our other studio a little bit south of town here is the Grizz. But we're going right now to Jason Grubb, who is, he's a guide, and he's a... Jason, I'll tell you what, instead of me trying to explain what you do, why don't you?
Well, I'm here in California, and I do a little bit of stuff on freshwater and saltwater. My main gig is fly fishing for bass. Do things a little differently than some of the bass fishermen out there, but we're in the heart of the season right now, good topwater starting, and so I'm out on the California lakes chasing big largemouth.
Wow. I'm sure you've got Grizz's attention already.
Yeah, I tell you that. I love fishing for big bass with a fly rod.
Well,
yeah, we did really well earlier. I just got off the water a little bit ago, and we threw a damsel fly and dragonfly patterns all morning at them, and they were just eating it up. It was really warm this morning, so the dragonflies started hatching like crazy, and these bass were coming up and hitting the fly and coming about 2 feet out of the water, so it was a lot of fun.
Well, that was great. Did you get any big stuff?
Biggest today was about a 4.5-pounder, which I'm not complaining about at all. It was a great fish, and then we also mixed in a few smallmouths here and there, which they're really aggressive when topwater season comes around.
Well, now that I haven't done a lot of is a smallmouth. I have done it up in the Great Lakes, but I've not had the opportunity to do a lot of smallmouth with a fly. I do a lot of fly fishing down here in Mexico for big bass. My biggest one right now is 19 3/4 on a fly.
And where was that, Chris?
That was in El Salto, John. It was on a mouse pattern, on a spun hair mouse.
And I think Jason, when we were talking earlier, he will occasionally take some of his clients down to mainland Mexico for the bass.
Yeah, we go to Lake El Salto as well, fly fishing and also using bait casters when it gets warm. But last year on fly rod, I took an 8.5-pounder on a topwater fly. It was pretty incredible. He hit it so hard it scared me.
Yeah, what weight rod do you recommend for those big boys?
You know, down there I'm using 8 and 9 weight. I pull out my 9 weight when I'm throwing the really big stuff, just because some of those big topwater flies get so wind resistant, you need a lot of backbone in your rod. If I'm going subsurface or smaller topwater, I'll drop down to an 8 weight. But, you know, 8 weight usually gets the job done. If you need to step it up a little bit more, I'd go to a 9 weight. 7 weight, if you get into a really big fish, you have a little bit of a hard time turning him. So that's where I like 8 or 9. If you get into the 6 or 7 weight, they beat you up a little bit. So.
Jason, if you're going to be doing what you're doing, it would seem to me that you're going to have to be in a lake that has a lot of bass, because it doesn't sound like it's as easy as you're making it sound.
You know, it can be tricky at times. There is easier ways to catch, you know, bass than a fly rod, but it's a lot of fun, too. And then I'll tell you what, I think some of the fly fishermen out there have an advantage on some of these, you know, public lakes, because these fish are so used to seeing, you know, the big spooks and the normal poppers that all the spinning rod and bait casting guys are throwing. You change it up and put a fly out there, and these fish have not seen flies. So,
the other thing I think, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, it looks natural, the fly.
Yeah, it's a lot lighter. It's not heavy, so that you can throw it with a bait caster. And I'll tell you what, I also use really small little poppers, small deer hair frog patterns that are, you know, maybe a quarter of the size of the normal poppers that guys are throwing. And these fish have not seen topwater baits that size. They're all over it. So, and right now is the time of year that this is really working, because these lakes have had a lot of pressure. They've seen every bait in the world thrown at them. And I'm out there throwing these tiny little poppers and knocking them dead, because they think it's real, because they're not seeing it every day.
Now, what about the water temperature? If it's, you know, this time of the year, things are warming up, do the bass go down deeper into the lake?
Yeah, they can, during the day especially. You know, the best top water is getting out there really early. Start of the day, get out there at first light. And then I also run evening trips from 4 to 8 o'clock. And, you know, that last hour and a half in the evening, the lake clears out. There's no boats out there, and the top water blows up.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm running both early morning and late evening trips and doing really well. And I'll have good top water all the way through fall. So I think the fall, you know, fishing, especially with fly rod, can just be phenomenal once the summer crowds start to leave and the temperatures mellow out a little bit. It gets really good.
Hmm. Well, that that sounds very exciting. I wouldn't believe that you could be that successful with a fly on largemouth bass, because they're even under the best of conditions, they're not that easy to get.
Yeah, it can be tricky at times. I try and keep my clients on floating lines all the time. If they do go deep, once in a while you do have to go to a sink tip or full sink line, which isn't as fun as throwing a floating line. But if you can, you know, find some fish that are somewhat close to the surface, they're all over those flies. And also different lakes require different flies. Just certain fish get into certain colors and certain styles out there, and that's the tricky part to figure out. Mm-hmm. But once you start getting out there and doing it, it comes pretty quick.
Well, do you ever get them to hit on dry flies?
Say that again?
Will they ever hit on dry flies?
Yeah, you know, when you say dry fly, that's more of a trout term. Dry fly is imitating the different hatches for trout, like caddis or mayfly. When you go into the bass world, we're into the topwater baits. We're not necessarily imitating the caddis or the spinner falls or any of those types of hatches that come off. We're into the topwater stuff. And when you're out on lakes, this is more of the dragonfly pattern or the frogs or the mice. Bass like bigger baits. And that's where we spoke about needing a heavier rod, because these flies can be pretty big sometimes. And I know it's counterintuitive, but the bigger the fly is, the harder it is to cast, because it becomes wind resistant and you're having to carry more line to get these flies out to these fish. Plus, you're needing, you know, a 40 to 60 foot cast a lot of times, just so you're not spooking these fish out. So yeah, it can be a little tricky, and being able to throw those big flies is not the easiest thing in the world, but you just get out.
You know, down here, I throw a 9-10. I prefer, but I will pick out my 10, because there's a lot of sticks and trash in the water, and, you know, I want to be able to handle that big bass so he doesn't wrap around on me. And an 8-weight, just, I can't get it done good enough.
Yeah, I hear you.
Jason, we don't have a lot of time left, but where are some of the places that you recommend, and that if anybody wants to put together a trip and have you guide them, what are some of your favorite spots anywhere in the world?
Well, the two trips that I'm taking clients on right now, and if anybody's interested, definitely hit me up. I'm always looking for guys to join my groups. But the two places that I'm all over right now that are just absolutely incredible, well, the first one is Lake El Salto, which we mentioned. I think it's the best bass lake in the world, hands down. My last trip down there in 3.5 days, I caught 100 fish a day. And over 3.5 days, I caught 40 fish between 7 and 11 pounds. It's just unbelievable the size of these fish.
Okay. All right.
Number two trip that I'm pushing right now is the Amazon River for peacock.
Okay. Oh, that sounds incredible. Well, we're almost out of time, Jason, so let's get some contact information from you real quick.
Sure. My website is Breakwater Tours. And you can look me up on the web, and my website lays everything else. So www.breakwatertours.com, or you can give me a call at 805-698-2879. I'd love to tell you about everything.
Oh, that sounds very exciting. We're going to have to talk some more about that, especially the peacock. So that's breakwatertours.com, right?
You got it.
Okay, thanks a lot. That was a lot of fun. Thank you, Jason. Grizz, you stay there. We're going to be back with you in just a couple of minutes. And thank you, Jason. You're listening to Fish Talk Radio.
West Marine is America's favorite boating supply source. They've got thousands of items to keep your boat looking good and running like new. West Marine has an incredible selection of apparel and footwear for all your adventures on land and sea. Boats, motors, screws, fittings, the latest electronics, fishing gear, apparel, and friendly, knowledgeable staff. With locations nationwide, West Marine has all you need for fun on the water. Call 1-800-BOATING or log on to westmarine.com to locate the store nearest you. World-class golf, fishing, and diving in the clear, warm waters of the Sea of Cortez with a true five-star resort. The Grand Heritage Hotel and Resort at Costa Baja, great value and without the hustle of other parts of Baja. On the white sand beach with Espiritu Santos Island minutes away. Signature restaurants, pools, and accommodations for an intimate weekend, weddings, or corporate events. On the web at CostaBajaResort.com.
You can fish from a boat, or you can stand on shore, or you can use a pontoon with carpet on the floor. You can sit upon a dock or wade out to a big old rock on fishing, fishing, fishing.
Welcome back to Fish Talk Radio, talking about going fishing. We have John from Fishhound on the line with us, and we're going to get a report from who knows where, but Fishhound covers everything everywhere that you'd be interested in, whether it's all of the United States and beyond. So, John, let's go ahead and find out what you got going today and see if there's anything in particular that you might want to focus in on.
Yeah, let's take a trip around the country and give you a little action on some good reports across the country.
Okay.
Starting off at the Pueblo Reservoir out in Colorado, this week proved to be another hot, dry, and sunny week at Lake Pueblo State Park. Afternoon thunderstorms are common this time of year, and it can bring some sudden dangerous high winds, so be aware of changing conditions when you're out there boating. The water level on the reservoir is dropping quickly, exposing new shoreline and structure. The best times to fish are still very early in the morning and in the evening, and several fishermen have reported success in the past week catching bass and walleye. Most were using live baits, night crawlers, leeches, and minnows attached to jig heads, and
so you have, so Colorado has walleye? I didn't realize that.
That was a bit of a surprise for me as well when I was checking out the report. It's not very common for that area, but in this particular lake, it looks like some may have snuck in there and started producing.
Okay. And go ahead and keep moving around.
Sure. A little closer to home in Northern California up in Clear Lake. The bite has gotten tougher, but it's normal for this time of the year. The upper end of the lake has miles and miles of weed beds for the fish to find cover in, and that's where you're going to find them. The hot weather also drives the fish deeper into the south end of the lake around the rock piles, holding on the deeper breaks and ledges. So you want to concentrate your efforts on the north end of the lake, working baits around the weed beds. Reaction baits such as crankbaits, spinnerbaits, and chatterbaits have been the most successful. Mm-hmm. And the lake is still dropping with its water level, and the hot weather has brought on some pretty severe algae blooms in some areas. And many fish have also been caught with flipping baits, heavier weights to the weed bed pockets. Drop-shotting worms around the edges of the weed beds will also work.
Okay. Well, what about, this is the time of the year where a lot of times families just will get in their RV or motorhome or just to get in the station wagon and head out. Again, do you have any tips for anybody that's maybe not an expert angler on some ideas on where to go and if they're just out looking for trout?
Yeah, you know, it's funny you mentioned that, John. I was reading a report out in Dry Run Creek out in Arkansas. The summer vacation season, like you said, is in full swing, and there's been much more fishing pressure on this particular creek. But that's the best place to beat the heat. The creek is located on a tight little valley, and it's always much cooler down there. You want to fish early, late during the week to escape the crowds.
Mm-hmm.
But this is where you want to achieve success. The trout here are huge, and it is absolutely the best place on earth to introduce our youth into trout fishing.
Oh, that sounds great. That sounds great. And any particular tips if somebody's going to go out chasing them, should, as far as equipment or, you know, of course, we always recommend that if you're going to go to a new place, you stop in at one of the sporting goods, well, not actually sporting goods stores, but maybe a tackle shop.
Absolutely. You know, it's not very expensive to get started in the sport of fishing. You don't need that 100-plus rod, especially with the youth. Stop into your local bait or tackle shop before you head out. Those guys are on the water constantly, so they know what's working. And it's really just good to educate yourself prior to heading out. And fishhound.com is a great place to do that.
Great. Well, why don't you give us just some quick information about fishhound.com?
Sure, I'd be happy to. We are the largest source for online fishing reports.
John, for some reason you're fading out.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just saying, you know, we're your one-stop shop for fishing reports, contests, gear testing, recipes, travel information. You know, book your next guide trip through our website. We really have it all. We're here to arm you with everything you need before you hit the water.
Sounds great. And we're going to even get some more guides for you because you need more coverage than Baja, so we're going to help you out with that. But that is real simple. It's just called fishhound.com, right?
That's correct.
Great. Hey, another great job, John. Thank you very much.
Always a pleasure, guys. Have a great day.
You betcha. Okay, we're going to do something a little bit different now. We're going to go up to Alaska to Clover Pass, or Ketchikan, apparently is probably a better description, because we have Michael Briggs that does help operate Clover Pass Resort as far as Cedars and also Silver King Lodge. But Michael, one of the things we want to talk to you about today is, I don't know how long you've been doing it, but I know it's been at least a couple of years. You've got a very special tournament that happens towards the latter part of the summer when the pink salmon are in full bloom.
That's correct, yeah. In fact, it's going to be taking place next Saturday, August 11th. We've got a full week of activities for the ladies that come up from down south and come visit us, but even the locals are participating in this tournament, and they create teams, and basically it's a pink salmon derby for ladies only, and the proceeds of it all benefit breast cancer research.
Yeah, well, I think that's incredible. Grizz, you know, this time of the year, there's tournaments going on all over the place, but this is the only one I know of that's are for ladies only.
Yeah, I think that's great. There should be more of them like that, because I'd like to go.
Yeah, well, sorry, Grizz. I'm sure
not
you would.
Because I'm a lady, I would just like to watch.
Yeah, I'm sure you would.
But, you know, it's not often either that you see many pink salmon derbies. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of silver salmon and king salmon derbies, but not too often the pinks get the spotlight. So we tied it in with the breast cancer thing, and we're all pretty pleased with the way it's turning out for us.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think the pink salmon don't get the credit they deserve. They're a lot of fun to catch, and as you know, most every salmon has two names, and that pink is also, I believe, known as a humpy. But you know, as far as the quality of the meat, I have no problem with it at all. I think it's great.
I like eating it.
Mm-hmm. And they're certainly fun to catch, and this time of the year,
they're pretty.
Yeah. Yes, they are. And this time of the year, there's a lot of them. So how is it stacking up this time of the year for the pinks?
Actually, the pinks have been really, really thick this year. I went out last week and limited out on them in about 2 hours without even actually, sadly, no coho bite that day. I just had my limit of 6 pinks and headed back to the dock.
Well, that's not a bad thing, and they're fun to catch, aren't
so
they?
So you pinked out.
You pinked out.
You know, it's funny. It's like, I mean, like John said, the meat is wonderful. I mean, all the species of salmon, chum are very oily fish. You know, dog salmon are very oily and great meat. And it's just, I think that with Alaskans in particular, we get a little bit snobbish about our salmon up here and decide that, you know, oh, well, if it's not a coho or a king, we don't want any part of it. But they're delicious. They're wonderful fish.
Yeah, well, every fish can be cooked to be good. I don't even care if it's a carp or whatever, you know. You just got to know how to cook them.
Well,
or smoke them.
Yeah,
or
I have a hard time keeping them lit.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, you know, that's something that I like to do. And when you smoke, I don't think you can tell the difference between a silver and a pink when you smoke them. And
I agree.
Mm-hmm. Now, and you know, chum are, you know, they're I think there's a reason they call them dogfish, but you know, smoked they worked out real well because, like you said, they're very oily, but you know, they're not very desirable. But you know, tell us some more about the pink tournament.
Well, it is basically a 5-day event. The ladies will come in on Tuesday, and we'll have like a little welcoming dinner. The next day they go out guided fishing, so we send them out on a day of guided fishing. They'll come back in and we'll do some sort of fishing demonstrations for them to give them a little bit of a leg up when they get out there on their own. And then they'll spend the next couple of days fishing from our yellow boats. I know you're familiar with those, John, but they're 20-foot Thunderjet boats with a 90-horsepower Yamaha on them, and they can go burn around all over Southeast Alaska in those. So they'll get some sightseeing and some great fishing in. And then on Saturday there will be the tournament. That, like I said, pit some of the teams here locally against the people who are coming to visit from out of town. And that'll go on all day from 8 to 4. This year we have a celebrity attending. I don't know if you're familiar with Georgia Pellegrini, but she's written a book called The Girl Hunter, in which she describes basically going out and taking wild game and turning it into gourmet meals. And so we've got her here doing cooking, you know, salmon cooking demonstrations, and she's participating in the tournament as well. And we're really looking forward to having her and her guests.
Man, I want to go. Now, absolutely. I wouldn't pass for a woman, though, would I, John?
Well, I'm not even sure you'd pass for a man.
Oh, thanks a lot. That's why they call me the Grizz.
There you go. There you go. There's a reason for that. But now, the ladies that come up, are they, do they typically just come up by themselves? Are they allowed to bring a significant other? Or are they, you know, is it generally speaking, are they... They come from all over the United States?
Yeah, I mean, we've got a lady from International Falls, Minnesota, a lady from Pensacola, Florida, one from Chicago, I mean, Baltimore, Maryland, and they do typically come on their own. They don't usually bring somebody with them, but not that that's not allowed. If they wanted to bring their husband or something like that, they'd be more than happy to, more than welcome to. And, you know, they can't assist the ladies on Derby Day.
Right.
You know, no men in the boat on Derby Day.
Okay.
We're trying to foster an environment, honestly, where women don't have this feeling of being intimidated
exactly.
by the fellas.
Exactly. Let the guys do their thing. Anyway, we're going to have to let you go, Michael. Give us a quick contact information. So might be late for this year, but I'm sure that we got some ladies out there interested. So real quickly, what's the contact information?
Well, you can call me at 888-564-4525 or go on the website at www.cloverpassresort.com.
Cloverpassresort.com. Thank you, Michael. We appreciate that. And good luck on that, with those ladies up there. And Grizz, will you stick around? We're going to be back in just a couple of minutes. You're listening to Fish Talk Radio.
Vagabundos Del Mar Boat and Travel Club has 42 years experience introducing RVers to the joys of Mexico. Specializing in Baja, Vagabundos leads caravans and sponsors fishing tournaments, trailer boat cruises, and weekend getaways in Mexico and the West. Vagabundos Del Mar also saves its 10,000 members tons of money on low-cost auto insurance. Stay up to date on Mexican travel with the printed newsletter online at vagabundos.com or call 800-474-BAHA.
For more than a century, sport fishermen have led the charge for conservation. From trout to marlin, anglers have worked to protect our natural resources and establish successful programs that benefit fish and fishermen. Today, this legacy is at risk unless we step up and lead the fight for real world conservation. That's what the Sport Fishing Conservancy is all about, doing what's best for fish and fishing and making sure anglers get the credit we deserve. Check out the Sport Fishing Conservancy and find out how you can help at sportcon.org.
There's nothing like a morning bite when the fish are eating well, or a new crankbait that's running straight over a rocky ledge or tree that fell, a new shiny boat that I can tow to every lake.
Welcome
that
back
I
to Fish Talk Radio. This is John Hennigan in studio, and of course we also have the Grizz that's here with us, maybe not physically, but he's certainly sharing the show with us.
Spirit, John.
You're also, yes, you're there in spirit, we're having a great time. We're going to talk to Mandy at Lake Shasta, and Mandy, And this time of the year, of course, is when the families are hitting the road and people want to go out and spend some time on the water and hopefully put a line in the water. And Lake Shasta is such a beautiful place to do that. So give us a quick idea about Lake Shasta and about the operation that you're running, and then maybe we can even see if there's anything biting.
All right. Well, it's pretty hot up here. We're all melting. But
melting, yeah.
The lake is down about 47 feet. Still beautiful, though. Green,
47
sunny.
Feet.
I know.
I know.
I mean, well, that changes lakes into puddles.
Yeah, at a 365 miles of shoreline, that's nothing. So it's still gorgeous, and there's still a lot of people out there utilizing the lake, water skiing and wakeboarding and fishing, and so it's good.
Well, I guess the good thing about that is it gives you a lot of shoreline, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's, I mean, until the water goes down, there's really, when the water's up, there's no shoreline.
Mm-hmm.
There's nowhere to, like, just pull off, and there's just too many trees. But so when the water goes down, people get excited because you can pull your boat off and shore tie it off and mm-hmm. hang out on the side and
yeah.
go swimming or...
Just run it up into the sand or the mud or whatever it is.
the red rocks.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's real good on a boat, the red rocks, John.
Tell us a little bit about the facilities that you have.
Well, we run the campgrounds and the boat launches. We're concessionaires for the Forest Service, so we take care of all the campgrounds and public boat launches around Shasta Lake.
Mm-hmm.
So that's enough in itself, I guess.
Well, I know that because I've had the chance to visit, and you've got some great facilities, and no matter what you're looking for, anywhere from just kind of a bare campsite to, kind of like a deluxe house.
Yeah, we have some yurts that are in one of our campsites, Lakeshore East. They're kind of nice. It's just a glorified tent. So just somebody like me that doesn't like to put up a tent, that would be the place for them.
Mm-hmm.
I give up tents years ago. So I'll go with
RV.
The luxurious tent.
Yeah.
Yeah. A big RV with a TV in it.
There you go.
I can handle that. Air conditioning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Soft bed. No rock. No big red rocks.
Well,
no.
It does sound like it'd be a good idea to get in the water while you're up there.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Well, what's the fishing like right now with the water down and the temperature up?
You know, the bass are biting really good, and we've had some people come in and get their season passes, and they're just saying that the bass are amazing right now. The salmon around the dam, they're hitting pretty hard right now too.
Mm-hmm.
So,
is that
a little
coconut?
Bit of everything. People are mm-hmm. going. You know, I haven't really heard of anybody catching any trout. It's just been salmon or bass lately.
That's can't complain about that, huh?
And
is that kokanee salmon? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
Oh, those are a lot of fun.
Oh yeah, yeah. Fighters.
Yeah. Oh, they're a lot of fun, and they, you know, not only do they taste good, they're a lot of fun to catch.
Well, see, I'm one of those people. I like to go fishing, but I don't eat it.
Okay. Well, if you got any extras, don't worry about it. But
I'm the same way with you. I'm catch and release.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, I'll put them in the in the mail for you, and they'll be there in a couple days.
There you go. Okay.
Yeah, they'll smell real good, John. You'll be able to know when they get there.
Well, of course, bass is something that most people don't want to kill.
No,
they
I
are a lot of fun.
Right.
Okay, how do we get in touch with you, Mandy?
You can visit our website at ShastaTrinityCamping.com. Or you can visit our Facebook page at Shasta Camping.
Okay.
Sorry, Shasta Lake Camping. I'm sorry.
Okay, Shasta Lake Camping, and that's on Facebook.
Yes.
All right. Thank you very much.
All
Sounds
right,
fantastic.
Thank you guys.
Okay, have a good time up there.
All right. Thanks.
Alrighty. Okay.
All right,
bye-bye.
All right. We're going back to talk about some bass angling again. We have Mark from Bass Angler Magazine, and I suspect that's a subject that he knows something about.
I know a little bit about it.
Okay.
You know, we work on it day in and day out, 8 days a week.
Yeah. Well, we were just...
I'm sure what you do, Mark, if you don't know, you still do.
Mm-hmm. We fish, so, sometimes
yeah.
we have a tendency to stretch the truth.
Well, Mark,
yeah,
give us some...
put the grizz factor.
There you go. Mark, give us some ideas on where you're recommending now that people, if they're tracking bass, where do they find them?
You know, right now, a lot of the lakes kind of stratify, and there's what's called a thermocline, where the water is basically set up in layers. And more often than not, you're going to find bass in the upper portion of the thermocline or right at that thermocline, which is, you know, varies in all lakes, but if a general depth would be like, you know, between 20 and 30 feet.
Mm-hmm.
So more often than not during the day when, you know, when the water's stratified, you can get these fish around 20 to 30 feet deep. So if you're out in a boat with a depth finder, the thermocline, it'll look like almost like the bottom, except it'll be just mixed up with, I don't know how to sell it. It's kind of mixed up, you know, about 20 to 30 feet deep, and then you'll see the bottom down below that. So it's a good idea just to find that thermocline, and then you want to find it, and then you want to fish some structure that is right above that thermocline point. So if you're looking on your depth finder and you see it in 25 feet of water, then you can either go find an island top or go mm-hmm. close to the bank where you get into right about that 25, 23 foot range, and that's generally where you're going to find the fish, right at that edge.
Well, you're probably not throwing to them at that depth, are you? How do you get down?
Well, a lot of times you'll use a weighted lure. Say, you know, plastic worm is probably the, you know, one of the prime baits to throw this time of year. So you throw it what's called Texas rig, and that's where there's a bullet weight slid up on the line, and then you tie the hook to the line, and then you thread a worm on. So it'll have this weight in front of it, and you basically throw it out, and you let the weight and the worm go all the way to the bottom, and then you can work that bait back up. You know, if you're fishing on the bank, you'll work it back towards the shore. If you're mm-hmm. in a boat, you throw it out and work it back towards your boat. And, you know, there's almost no wrong way to work it. You know, generally I'll throw it out and let it hit the bottom, and then I'll kind of shake it and hop it and wiggle it and make it move back to where it's still pretty close to the bottom, but move along. And then if I think there's some fish in the area and they don't bite that presentation, then I'll switch it up and maybe I'll move it a little bit faster or, like, you know, could move it a little bit slower. Sometimes I'll even stop it and let it sit for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's the whole key about bass fishing is just trying to figure it out, you know, how to fool these fish and, you know, get them to bite.
Now, what kind of water are you looking for if you're going bass fishing?
I don't understand.
Well, but in other words, you're probably not going to find them in a fast-running stream. But if you know if you're looking for bass and targeting them, is there anything to keep in mind? Do they like clear water, cold water?
Well, clear water is pretty good. Bass are generally a sight-feeding fish, so they like to chase down their prey and eat it. So you're going to look for, you can kind of think of bass as like a mugger in an alley. So you want to find those spots where the smaller fish can be easily ambushed. So the bass will sit behind, you know, if they can be in fast-moving streams also, you know, but not the, like a trout stream that's only a foot or so deep. But if you have a river that's, you know, 5 to 10 feet deep, sure, it could have bass or smallmouth or spotted bass. And they're generally going to be like behind a rock. They're going to be in a shade line. They're going to be somewhere where they can hide behind something. So that's kind of the mentality you want to use if you're thinking about where the fish could be. Is there going to be in an area where they can hide behind something and ambush their prey?
That's a very good analogy. That I can visualize that. So, but they normally do like structure. Is that correct?
They do like structure. They gravitate towards something. You know, if you had a big giant swimming pool and you threw a bunch of bass in there, they would gravitate towards the shade line, or say if you threw a big rock in the middle, they would gravitate towards that rock. So, yes, they're very much oriented towards structure or cover.
Mm-hmm. And this time of the year, is there any techniques that you use differently in the middle of the summer than you would at other times of the year?
A lot of times the fish, you can fish a little bit faster because bass are cold-blooded. You know, their metabolism rises as the water heats up, so they'll be moving a little bit faster. So it's nice you can fish a little bit faster-moving baits. You know, this time of year, you can almost throw whatever you like. If it's early morning, you can almost throw anything. You can almost throw a stick out there sometimes and move it real fast, and you can get a bite. You know, as the day moves on, it gets hotter. If it's hot, high skies, you know, the fish have a tendency to go a little deeper, and then that's where you want to go to the worm technique we were talking about, where you Texas rig a worm and run it along the bottom.
So you're typically then the earlier or in the end of the day are usually better?
Low light conditions. So a lot of times the light, the ambient light that we have will make up for a loss of structure. So say you have a straight bank and the sun starts going down, you have a shade line along that bank. Those fish can move up and work up and down that bank versus if the sun is bright on it, they won't be there. They'll be mm-hmm. out relating to some other structure.
Okay.
So you can also think of shade or a shade line as a piece of structure.
And
you know, even if there's a tree up in the water and laying a shadow in the water.
Okay, we're almost out of time here. Tell us a little bit about Bass Angler Magazine. How do we get in touch with you and that?
Well, we have a website, bassmag.com. And, you know, if you're interested in learning more about catching bass, you know, we are the number one source to help you catch more fish. So,
okay.
BASSMAG.com.
That's easy.
Go take a look.
BassMag.com. Okay. Hey, thanks a lot. We appreciate that, Mark. You did a great job. You're listening to Fish Talk Radio. We're going to take a quick break, and DeGriz and I will be back with you momentarily.